Chapter 7. The long meeting had ended. The morning had given way to dusk, but Reggie still had work to do. She slipped outside of the dilapidated mansion and took a few moments to study the grounds in the dwindling light. Ever since the headquarters of Miles Mallory's organization had been established here, Reggie had read up on the history of the place. Originally, a feudal castle had stood on the footprint where the mansion did now. The surrounding lands had been the fiefdom of the wealthy lord of the manor, who ruled his people encased in a suit of armor, ready at a moment's notice to cleave in a skull or two, if necessary, with his battle axe. Later, the castle had fallen, and in its place the mansion had risen. The fiefdoms had dissolved, and the squires had replaced armor and mace with the threat of debtor's prison if the farmers renting their lands did not pay their bills. The property had remained in the same family for many generations, finally descending to distant cousins of the original owners whose income had never approached the level necessary to maintain the estate. During the two world wars, Harrisfield, Reggie had never discovered a definitive account of where the name came from, was used as a hospital for wounded soldiers. After that, it lay abandoned for several decades, until the government had been compelled to take it over and make minimal repairs. Mallory had discovered the place and finagled the use of it. To the outside world, it was merely an informal gathering place for eccentric academics, whose work was as esoteric as it was innocuous. Reggie passed by columns of ragged English boxwoods, their urine odor sweeping over her. Even though it was very late in the spring, a chilly breeze nudged at her back as she trudged along. She zipped up her worn leather jacket, which had belonged to her older brother. Though he'd only been 12 at the time of his death, he had been over 6 feet tall, and the jacket enveloped her, even as his death had shattered her. She still felt emotionally brittle, like a pane of cracked glass that would disintegrate with the very next impact. After a walk of a quarter mile, she pushed open the door of what had once been the estate's greenhouse. The smell of peat and mulch and rotting plants still drifted into her nostrils, even though there had been no gardener or gardening here for decades. She passed by broken glass and loose boards that had dropped from the ceiling. Shadows were cast in all directions as the sun continued its descent into the English countryside. The chilly breeze turned still colder as it was funneled through the small openings in the windows and the walls, fluttering spiderwebs and rustling the disintegrating remnants of a horticulturalist's paradise. Reggie reached the set of double doors set at an angle into the corner of the structure. She inserted her key in the heavy padlock, tugged open the doors, and pulled the chain on the bare light bulb set just inside the revealed space. A moment later, the passage she stepped down into became dimly illuminated and smelled strongly of damp soil, making her feel slightly sick. She touched dirt, walked downward at a 20-degree angle for another 15 paces, where the tunnel leveled out. She had no idea who'd carved it out of the earth or why, but it did come in handy now. She reached the end of the passage, where a number of mattresses had been placed on end and positioned front to back. A small table was set against a dirt sidewall. On the table was a stack of paper and a small battery-powered fan. She picked up the top sheet and, using a clip, fastened it to a cord that hung between the two sidewalls of the tunnel. Next to the stack were a number of ear mufflers and safety goggles. She slipped a pair of mufflers around her neck where they dangled loosely and put on the protective eyewear. On the sheet of paper was the blackened image of a man with black rings running around it. She paced off 30 feet, turned, took out her pistol from its belt holster, checked the load, slipped the ear mufflers on, assumed her preferred firing stance, took aim, and triggered off her full mag. There was very little ventilation down here, and the acrid burn of the ordnance was immediately absorbed into her nostrils. Bits of dirt dislodged by the gun's discharge, fell from between cracks in the weathered boards forming the tunnel's beamed ceiling. She coughed, whipped the air with her hand to clear the smoke and dust, and walked forward to examine her marksmanship, pausing for a moment to turn on the fan. It lazily oscillated back and forth, but took its time in clearing away the haze. So much for first-class shooting facilities. 7 of her 11 rounds were placed where she wanted them, in the torso. All would have hit vital organs if the target had been real. 2 shots were in the head, also where she had aimed. 1 round had fallen outside a proper kill zone by a millimeter. The last shot had missed by an unacceptable margin. She replaced the target with a fresh one, reloaded, and did it again. 10 out of 11. She did it again. 11 for 11. She did it once more. 9 out of 11. Despite the efforts of the fan, the tunnel was now heavy with the smoke, and her lungs felt congested. "Bloody hell," she barked, as she hacked and whipped the murky haze with her hand. Reggie figured she could blame the last few misses on not being able to actually breathe or even see the damn target. She trudged back down the tunnel, wishing that they could have a proper gun range. But the tunnel was the only place where the sound of the shots wouldn't carry to a pair of ears that might in turn contact the local constabulary. Doddering academics were not supposed to have penchants for firearms. She was surprised to see Witt standing by the doors leading back into the greenhouse.